podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Anfield Wrap after Wolves 3, Liverpool 0. I know it was a tough watch, so thank you for listening. Hopefully this is more enjoyable than the game was. I have got Dan Austin, Rob Gutman and Neil Jones from Goal alongside me. But before we start, something a bit more positive. We are delighted to partner with Access Sport College, a national sports training provider focused on giving students the best possible opportunities to achieve a future in the sports industry. As part of National Apprenticeship Week, Access is delivering skills for life to learners locally and nationally, providing pathways onto rewarding careers within the sport and leisure industries, while supporting employees in developing talented workforces that are equipped with skills for the future. Delivering industry-leading and high-quality Level 2 and 3 sport and leisure-based apprenticeship programmes within professional sport and leisure environments, Access Sport apprenticeships are supported by skilled and qualified mentors with a wealth of knowledge and experience, enabling learners to thrive and establish themselves within the industry. If you're a young learner, or a parent or a friend of a young learner, there we go, did it that time, who has a passion or career ambitions in coaching, community sport, fitness instructing, or making a difference to active lifestyles and wellbeing within local communities, then do check out Access Sport Apprenticeships. You can get more information, including a list of local and national opportunities via accesssport.ac.uk/tour. To register your interest, and a member of their team will be in touch. Well, did that quite smoothly. I'm happy with that. We'll go with that. So, Rob, let's reflect on the weekend. Playing a team that has only scored 6 at home all campaign. Hard.
Does that include the 3 against us?
No, that was before the 3 against us. Yeah, so 9 now. It's hard not to feel pessimistic in the wake of a lot of results recently. And Brighton losing 3-0 felt like it should have been the rock bottom. And then all of a sudden that feels like a new low. Have you recovered?
Absolutely not. Wow, so we've just increased their goal tally at home by 50% in a game.
In one game. Well, within 12 minutes pretty much, yeah.
They couldn't hit a cow's ass with a banjo, as we used to say in the 1980s, and they scored 3 against us in 65 minutes or whatever it was. I was privileged to be there to see a nadir in the history of this football club. It's sort of memories of losing to Blackburn under Roy Hodgson back in the whenever it was, 2010. Yeah. Jeez, I mean, it can't be that bad. But in certain moments at the moment, it feels that bad. Liverpool's form is, since the restart, we lost to City and won 2 league games without being fantastic in either. And I think in all comps since, what have we failed to win in 6 or 7, lost 4? Something like that.
Neil
Jones?
Conceded
9. 1-7.
We've conceded 9 against Brighton.
Oh, yes, because we won against
Wolves and Brentford, yeah.
But it's getting spanked all over the park. Do you know what I mean? I mean, that's by okay, Brighton. We told ourselves afterwards, Brighton are fair side, you know. Well, Wolves aren't a fair side. Wolves, okay, they're slightly improved on where they were a few weeks ago, but they're not a good side. And it's just truly terrible. I mean, I enjoyed, that's not really the word. Liverpool had a 18 minutes, should we say, after half-time, where they threatened to be Liverpool again briefly. But the minute the third goal was scored, and then Klopp lamented it as first time Wolves crossed the half in the entire second half period, and they scored straight away. But it felt Liverpool didn't really have any response whatsoever to that. I think James Pearce talked about them passing the ball around Wolves in the last 4 minutes and olaying. I wasn't in the ground by then. I'd long since gone.
Absolutely horrible.
I was in a pub in Shrewsbury living my best life by then. but I deserved it. The Reds didn't.
Yeah, Neil, I don't think we can avoid some of the conversations that were happening after the game and the conversations online that have taken place in the wake of that. The manager's been quite positive, actually, in the aftermath of some of the games recently, saying, I'm talking about steps in the right direction, talking about improvements that have been made. There was definitely a change of tune in the press conference yesterday. So very frustrating, very disappointing. He described the start of the game was horrible, the absolute opposite of what we wanted to do. Do you think this is just frustration in the wake of a particularly poor performance or result, or a bit of a build-up of the players just not responding to what he's trying to get them to do on the pitch?
Yeah, I think a build-up, really. I mean, if you look at small steps he's been talking about, hasn't he, in recent weeks, and we've spoken a little bit about steps forward, clean sheets and Chelsea game, you know, digging in and getting a point, winning away at Wolves in the Cup. I didn't really see the small steps, to be perfectly honest. I actually thought the midfield sort of improvement was over-egged a little bit. I thought it was still much the same, except he was just maybe getting away with a little bit more in terms of the finishing. They didn't get away with anything on Saturday. And if you think So the day started, I was on my way to get picked up, and I get a message in the WhatsApp group from one of the footy lads, said, our game's off Saturday. Does anyone fancy an all-day on it? I'm watching the footy, and I was the most tempted I've ever been in my professional career to go, yeah, I'll go, I will, yeah. I'll just throw a sickie and I'll go. Because I thought this was, I didn't think it would be 3-0, but I thought they're not winning this game today, and it's going to be an awful game. Even if they do win, it'll be a slog. And then you get there, they kick off, they roll it back to Joel Matip, and he hits a 4-iron sort of knee height, and then instantly they've got the ball back and they're on the attack. And it felt like that was just the sort of the absolute tone set from the minute that the game kicked off, from the second the game kicked off. And by the time they'd sort of woken up, it was 2-0, could have been 3-0, could have been 4-0, could have been that by half time. You know, you think of Mateus Nunes missed a pretty good chance to put it to bed even before the break. And I think Hagen, the thing that I was looking for a sort of suitable picture to put on my Facebook page at full time, and I was looking at the sort of the Klopp on the sidelines, usually a good one because he's quite expressive, isn't he? You know, usually one at head and hands or something. He was sort of smiling. The ones I saw on Getty was sort of, he was a bit like just resigned
to
his fate.
He said unbelievable, didn't he, after the second goal? He literally sat back and said unbelievable.
It does feel like there's a lot of this been happening with Liverpool, where you sort of, you go into a game a little bit nervous, thinking that they're in poor form. Then you sort of build yourself to by the time you kick off, you think, no, come on, this is the day that Liverpool turn it around. And then they kick off, and within a minute or 2 minutes, you're thinking, it's not today. Not today, they're doing it. Brighton was one, Wolves was one, Fulham first game of the season was one, Old Trafford was another. You know, there's just so many of these. And yeah, I think Klopp's finally got to the point where he can't stand any of them at the moment.
Yeah, Dan, I'll read some quotes out from what he said. He said, absolutely not allowed to happen. Being passive, we caused the misery. You asked me if I can explain the 10 to 15 minutes at the start of the game and after 10 to 15 minutes after the game, and I still cannot. It's really tough to swallow. People have been talking, obviously, about a lack of investment. We'll come on to that in a minute. But how much of what happens in a game like that can really come down to what's happening on the training pitch? They've had a week to prepare for this game. 7 days, you think, would be plenty of time to come up against a side who's struggling in the league as well. And within 10 minutes, any plan that the manager put in place is pretty much gone out the window because we can see two stupid goals. And he spoke a lot about lack of confidence, but there's no excuse for the defending and the sort of the behaviour that was kind of on display, and the lack of being compact, the lack of aggression, all these things. And as the manager kind of expressing that, you can understand, can't you, why he has no explanation for it? Because how can you explain that kind of play from a team that, like we mentioned so many times last year, was so close to winning everything?
Whenever they have time to train, it feels like they get significantly worse. They had a month off when the Queen died, and they came back and conceded 3 to Brighton at home and were very fortunate to get a draw in that game because they were absolutely terrible. And then they had, most of them didn't go to the World Cup, and the ones that did were very quickly in Dubai because the national teams they were playing for weren't very good, the vast majority of them. And they got worse again. He changed the shape of Brighton and it was worse. They've done the midfield recently, and I agree with Neil in the sense that this is now the midfield that they seem to be going with, and Liverpool never look like scoring a goal anymore, ever. And they're still wide open at the back. He changed to the two up front thing in the autumn that, again, I think it felt for a couple of games like it was better, and I think actually it was probably just different. And that's why we were all a bit like, oh, well, all right, let's keep going with this, just because it was not the same kinds of horror show. They were slightly different. So everything that he tries, or whenever they actually have time together, and you would think, right, this is perfect. Now they can all work together, they can talk about things, they can figure things out, they can find solutions, they actually get worse. You know, after playing Wolves and with pretty much 10 days before a derby, you would think, right, under normal circumstances, at least they've got a while here, and maybe Everton's new manager thing will have relented a little bit by then or whatever. I wish it was now, kickoff, because at least it would be quicker. The more time they have, they seem to genuinely get worse.
But surely that's not down to a lack of coaching from the manager's side. Like the manager's not going into training every day and saying, okay, let's see how we can not perform.
The players are just not responding to what he's asking.
The players? Do you think the players are trying?
Everyone's trying to be better. 100%. Otherwise, they just wouldn't get picked. So they would just get sacked. So they're all trying to be better, but don't seem to believe in it. Any of them, I don't think. And I don't think the manager is sure of what he's doing, because he keeps trying these quite wildly different things. He never even probably a month ago, would have thought he'd have picked that midfield for a selection of league games. He never at the start of the season thought he'd be doing that two up front. They're just trying to firefight, and I don't think any of it has got a long-term plan in mind. I don't think any of it is based on like data or anything anymore. It just seems to be, this is really bad, can we do something different? And then they try the something different, and it's a bit worse because maybe it's more confusing or it's hard to get used to or whatever it is. There are definite issues with like some of them just concentrating. I think it was after Brighton in the FA Cup, he specifically said that he wasn't happy with a couple of players' body language. And throughout the season, there are certainly a couple of players who have been screamed at relentlessly by him on a touchline over and over and over again. Which people who mainly watch games on the TV might not have seen, but Fabinho, for example, I know he didn't play in this game, and I'm not trying to pick on him, but the manager picks on him all the time, he screams at him, game after game after game. So I think it's loads and loads of different things. Some players probably just have absolute zero belief in themselves or anyone else anymore, and it's really hard to build that up. Some of them probably don't understand the new things that they're being asked to do and therefore aren't able to implement them. And if you've got all sorts of different people having doubts in their mind for different things, then that means that sometimes, as Neil said, when they first boot that ball forward in the match, within 10 seconds, they're all looking around at each other and going, fucking hell, what are we meant to do here? This again, is it? The goal, the second goal that Gomez heads away, that's a really bad header, but no one seems to talk to him and tell him what to do. The goalkeeper doesn't shout at him. No one really takes responsibility for anything anymore. And what that means is it's basically everyone's fault. And that's really hard to fix. If it was just like, oh, this one area of the pitch or this one person or whatever, then you could at least go, well, that's the thing that needs to change. So you just try something different there and it might work. They keep trying loads of different things and it gets worse. And that's so hard to recover from. And everyone, both in terms of the way that they play, but also the way that they are with each other, the lack of communication and stuff like that, and even the manager, they're all doing things that aren't like them. Whether it just be in like small moments and passages of play or the bigger picture across many, many matches. And when a team is doing things that really aren't like itself and that make zero sense and don't get better, that's really bad and really hard to change. And I don't know what it is that they can change in the immediate term to make it much better.
I think as well, the other thing is, I think at this moment that Liverpool have declined, I think the rest of the Premier League is just better as well, in terms of, not necessarily in terms of brilliant teams, but better at playing football. So if you know, better coached, better sort of analysis, better knowledge of the opposition, and better footballers from sort of 1 to 11, you're not getting these teams where it's like two dog centre-backs who just launch it forward and a big number nine who flicks it on, and, you know, they play set pieces and that kind of thing. Most of the teams in the Premier League, if you give them the space, they can play out from the back. The goalkeeper can handle the ball. He can play. And Wolves have got good footballers. You know, they're not in a good position in the league, or they haven't been. But yeah, it doesn't take much if you do the basics right in terms of control the ball, pass the ball, move off the ball, run with it. You know, you can get round this Liverpool team very easily. In the past, maybe this Liverpool team would have got away with it and got into sort of slog matches where almost it's 0-0 and they can't break a team down who are just sitting in because it's Liverpool. But actually teams now are just saying, well, they're not that good, they're not going to score against us, and we'll probably get one if we you know, do the right things often enough. And that makes it worse and worse and worse. You know, we've seen games where Liverpool have played Stoke away or at Anfield and you think, oh, that was just a bad performance because we couldn't break them down or couldn't create enough chances. It's not like that anymore. It's like we're getting outplayed by you know, mid-table teams or lower reach teams. You know, if it happens on Monday night, I mean, we'll hear the alarm bells, I think, across the world.
And I come back to you on this one because you talk about the analysis and other teams and how they're improving in all areas. Liverpool used to be a club with such a clear plan, there was such a clear pathway, there was decision-making processes, there was real stability from the top. How much of that instability that's happening at the moment, whether it's around key people leaving, whether it's around the sale of the club or potential sale of the club or all the conversations around that, do you think are now starting to trickle down and having an impact in the performance on the pitch?
It has to be. I mean, you look at sort of the key pillars of Liverpool's rise. You know, there's only really Klopp at the moment out there, isn't there? You know, the captain's not playing, the vice captain's not playing, Virgil van Dijk, the third captain's not playing. You know, you've lost your sporting director, you've lost, you know, the main figurehead of the ownership. I'm yeah, I'm speculating a little bit, but with a little bit of rumour and knowledge that the atmosphere must be different around the training ground. It has to be. If it isn't, then it should be, because they're struggling. There is... Klopp's got far fewer people, I think, that he can sort of hang his hat on. You know, Fabinho's another good example. He's someone who's so sort of important to the team and has been. You think of all the sort of... all the bullet points that you put on your sort of why Liverpool are great. So many of them are missing at the moment. Salah is missing. Trent and Robertson's output from fullback is missing. Legs, energy, endeavour. You know, all the things that were sort of what Liverpool were built on have gone. I think you can even look at... without going into investment, just recruitment in terms of the players, you can look at that and say there's a few. I mean, Gakpo again could be a good player. I thought he was pretty good second half. Gakpo, I think I give him his due. I thought he had a go and showed more that he showed in the previous five that he played, certainly in the second half. But you look at him and you say, okay, that's a new type of sign that Liverpool have made there. That's not someone who fits what Liverpool buy in terms of a forward player, someone who's dynamic and quick and sort of really, really sort of, you know, in your face and hard to play against. He's a different type of player. So that suggests there's a change in that. Nunes is a bit similar in terms of, you know, the type of player he is. So all the sort of the key tenets of Liverpool over the last 5 years, there's a question mark next to all of them at the moment. And I wrote a piece on Sunday just about the manager and sort of, you know, he's still the biggest asset. But you have to question some of the decisions he's making. You have to question, you know, why they start games so poorly, why the substitutions don't seem to make the team better, why so many key players are off form at the same time. There's a lot of question marks there, but yeah, it doesn't bring any sort of light at the end of the tunnel at the moment. You know, you try and glimpse positives, and I'm sure we'll talk about Stefan Bajcetic is one potentially, but not many others.
Yeah, Rob, we are going to talk about the lack of investment, because there's a lot of question marks over a lot of things, but one is that there is clear areas of the squad and of the part that just aren't good enough and haven't had enough reinvestment into them. But this hasn't sort of had an impact until this season, and it's been such a stark drop-off. Do you think this just could be the culmination of sort of years of a lack of investment, particularly in the midfield area, but maybe even questions over defence now? And I know they bought in Gakpo. Maybe they thought the forward line was more important than midfield. We don't know the conversations that are happening behind the scenes, but is some of the poor performance now attributed to the fact that there just hasn't been enough investment over a series of seasons, and that's showing itself now?
The problem is the depth of the crisis is so profound that any negative element you can cite as a possible factor is going to be part of it. They're all true. It's about the riddle for the manager, or for the entire club really, is to work out where the balance lies. I have one perverse thing that's encouraging me at the moment is the level of performance drop of so many of the players, of every single one of them, bar the odd exception, like a youthful cult like by Cetic. It's so pan squad, this problem, that you go, maybe they're not all just shit, they're all just mentally in a terrible, terrible place. I would say half of them playing with fear in every touch of the ball, and those that are naturally can fight fear better, say an Andy Robert, just playing with frustration, a frustration that's impacting their ability to affect the fine margins of the game. So, you know, if you'd watched Liverpool for the first time over the last 3 or 4 weeks, you'd have gone, well, none of these are very good footballers, are they? There's your problem right there. And we know that's not the case. Look, a few weeks back, we could buy that maybe it's all on Fabinho falling off a cliff. Maybe Henderson's legs had gone. Maybe even it's a change. I mean, a lot of things Neil said, I can't disagree with the change of the system. And maybe it is a perfect storm and all these things apply. But the net effect now is they're all playing terribly. They are, to use a very obvious metaphor, a car that's brakes have been cut and they're just hurtling and hurtling and hurtling. And that's why anyone who thinks we've hit rock bottom, the news, it can get so much worse. Of course it can. I was you sat there watching that in that ground. You watched a team like Wolves walk through Liverpool.
They only have to do the basics right, and they can get chances and score against us. And every team knows that if they just get the basics right, they'll get the opportunities, and they're taking them, and we're not.
Well, I've now seen half hours where Brighton have done it, Brentford have done it, and Wolves have done it. Mm-hmm. No one near the top of the game. You know, okay, Brighton having a decent season, but still, for God's sake. I mean, they can drop points to anyone still anyway. So when you see this happen, and you see Liverpool's point-getting ratio being at relegation level, and it now being sustained for 7 or 8 games, I don't think we're... we'll go down. But anyone who thinks we can't finish in the bottom half of the table is deluded. They can very easily finish in the bottom half of the table. There is, there is a universe where, because I don't want to contradict myself here, these are good footballers, and a couple of games where the breaks go for them and a tiny bit of confidence comes back, one or two come back from injuries, you can also see how it corrects. I don't think it's going to correct to satisfy anyone. I don't see it being like 21 now where we go on a bit of a run and we get fourth. Anyone still clinging to the Real Madrid tires as this thing that's going to rejuvenate our season, I think is, of course, anything's possible in football. But
Andy is mouthing that they lost to Mallorca, I think. Yeah, but cool. Andy, that's clinging on to things.
It's clinging.
There's a lot of ham and wine there, Rob, that we'll get to enjoy.
Yeah.
That's the thing to cling to.
Yeah. There's a lot of ham and wine. Yeah, of course. Look, at the end of the day, Jesus Christ, we've got to find our motivations from somewhere, haven't we? I have, so the investment side of it, Harry, was the start of your question. Could that make a difference? Yes, in as much as it can make a psychological difference as much as a literal difference.
Well, even players coming in that haven't experienced basically last season, you know, Klopp does reference the fact in the press conference even this weekend that it was an issue. He's saying, you know, it's February now, a lot of time has passed, we can't be pinning things fitness-wise or anything to that.
Yeah.
But even bringing in players that mentally haven't gone through the physical and mental turmoil of what last season did and the seasons before going toe-to-toe with Manchester City, I just think that in itself would be a positive thing.
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking at the weekend, I'd rather be Chelsea and us are about level still, are we? Give or take something.
They went above this weekend.
We've got a game in hand, haven't we? Yeah, but we're both the same level of crap. But the only difference is their faces are pointing in the right direction. Ours are looking at our feet, right? That is
in as much as they've spent a lot of money on players and a bit of a scattergun approach, though.
It's the investment. I'll just finish because my point was linked to your investment. That they're an example of the psychology of it. I'm not saying we do what they do, but if you could wave a magic wand and we'd brought in a couple at the end of the transfer window, it would have just had us facing forward that bit more.
That has skewed the market, though, so much, hasn't it? Because we used to be able to get these players on these relatively cheap prices that were sort of incredible and like gems in the market, and now you're selling Enzo Fernandez for however much he went for, 109 million something, was it? And you're not going to be able to get these sort of gems. Sorry, Neil, go on. But
no, I was going to say, I think Chelsea's problem at the moment is that they know they're going to stumble on the right team. You know,
Eventually, Chelsea
going to find it. They can't find it at the moment. They were rubbish Friday against Fulham, you know, with a lot of expensive play. But you sort of think, well, there's a lot of darts they can throw there, and they'll find a solution, whether it's Mudrick or Madueke or Sterling or Havertz, whoever. You're looking at Liverpool thinking,
you throw darts
at the board at Liverpool, and it's just like anything could happen. You know, it could be this could get worse. You know, I'm in the camp now that I think Nat Phillips should start against Everton, just for Everton and for set pieces and for aerial sort of dominance. I'm saying Nat Phillips should start. I mean, you know, that's where you're at, and you sort of. I remember sort of the dog days of sort of all Liverpool managers, really, where you started looking at team selections and going, what were they thinking? You know, you maybe get like an on this day where you look at a lineup and you go, wow, did that team ever get put on the pitch? And you're starting to look at it a little bit with Liverpool, where you're thinking, where's this come from? Like, you know, how's the midfield in the Premier League? Stefan Bajcetic, Naby Keita and Thiago, you know, how, like, in years to come, I think we'll look at that and forget that they had a decent first outing against Wolves in the Cup, but we'll look at that and go, wow, like, that things went west quickly there, didn't they? And, you know, I don't get that sense with Chelsea. They've got that many options that you just think, well, every team that they put out, probably with the exception of the Liverpool game recently, you look at that and go, well, that's a good side. That'll probably win. And if it doesn't, it lets let itself down. With Liverpool, you're looking at the moment thinking, I don't fancy that team at all.
Yeah, Dan, I'll come to you. He was asked about his ability to turn things around, and the manager simply said, absolutely. I don't follow these kind of people on Twitter, but there are suggestions that have been a group of people that are questioning the manager's decision. I mean, it's for me, it's unbelievable, but what do you think?
I never see this either. I always think, I you always see like, oh, anyone saying that the manager should leave is wrong or whatever.
And who is the anyone?
Yeah, I think people just kind of get it in their heads that people are saying that, and then they all whip each other up and are like, well, people are definitely saying it then. Certainly no one of any fucking repute or anybody that goes the match on a regular basis or anything like that. Anyone whose voice gets heard in the ground would ever possibly conceive of that. As far as I am concerned, the man has built up enough credit in the bank to not just have a bad season, but to have absolutely loads of them. I wouldn't enjoy it. I wouldn't want it to happen. But he's built that up in my mind. Obviously, I don't like run a football club or whatever. I don't do the money or any other thing. So I get to just say and feel that without it being ever being my responsibility. But no, nobody with any level of seriousness about them at all in any regard would think that he in any way should be under some pressure or anything like that. Because he is, at the moment, he's had an absolutely awful season, by the way, really bad. Like, everything that he's tried has made stuff worse. That's fine to say that. But he's still the only thing, really, that the club's got going for it at the moment. Everything else is either bad or very uncertain. And there's a possibility within the next 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, whatever, that everything's wildly different. The playing squad might be massively different. The people that run the club are probably in some regard going to be different because they want to sell it. Who knows who that could be and what they're going to do and who they are and what their approach to the club and sport and the city and life generally are. The constant has to be him because he's an immensely intelligent man who knows how to build great football teams and has done it for us. And you also, the thing that's probably like tough about going to the game and stuff lately, or just supporting the team in whatever regard that people do, is there's nothing to really hang your hat on or believe in. People, you know, whenever Liverpool are bad, so it's like moaning about the atmosphere and stuff. To my mind, I first went in like 2001, and we've always had a really great crowd when things are either good or when there's at least something to believe in, like this is getting better or this player's brilliant and he's going to take us somewhere or this manager or whatever. And then when there's nothing to believe in, we're actually quite shit. And that's always been the case. And the idea that Anfield or an away end or whatever is always constantly loud because Liverpool are there, I don't think is true necessarily always. He's the thing to still believe in. It might be dead hard at the minute because he's getting stuff wrong and he's struggling and he's acknowledging that he doesn't know why things are going wrong or whatever a lot. But he's the reason to still think this isn't absolute perennial doom here. Because of who he is and his personality comes into that as well. Again, lately, quite understandably, he doesn't get to demonstrate it. He doesn't get to be bombastic and to speak so eloquently and stuff like that. But that's the thing that you can still, as a football supporter, as a Liverpool supporter, go, that's our fella. He's the thing that keeps this going. He's the thing that links the positive past to the theoretical positive future.
Well, just think about this hypothetical. Anyone who does consider a life after Jurgen Klopp, in his final season at Borussia Dortmund, he had a bad season. He corrected in the final third of the season, arguably, and they finished seventh, where they were threatened with relegation at one point. A massively loyal fan base at Dortmund were saying, I think his time has reached its natural conclusion and with a fond farewell will be good for all parties. I don't think they were saying that 18 months after he'd left.
Or now. Like 8 years later.
No. And just close your eyes, any doubters, to turn you back into believers. Imagine Jurgen Klopp rocking up at Chelsea or Tottenham or Man City or Man United as their manager beginning of last season. And we've got anyone else in the world you care to mention. How are you going to feel? Don't tell me that wouldn't fill you with dread and lament and pain and fear. You know, I drunkenly doubted Klopp once during the pandemic when we lost 6 games on the trot at home. but even then, I think we have to be fair. It's fair enough for people to go to howl in frustration and going, we can't just lose forever, you know, and everyone just say this is fine and let's leave him alone. It's but you've expressed it better than I attempted to drunkenly or anybody. Has done damage is it's okay to say this is wrong, that he's having a dog of a season, but that doesn't mean our future is without Jurgen Klopp. There endeth my sermon for today.
Well, absolutely. He's not above criticism, is he? But I don't think anyone has any doubt, especially in this room, that he's exactly the right man to sort of lead us out of this situation. Neil, I do want to touch what happened in the press conference, because there was a situation where he was asked a question by James Pearce and just elaborate on what happened because you were there.
Yeah, he refused to answer. Yeah, he answered it, but
he acknowledged
only when it was asked by Paul Rowan from the Times. He said, "I don't want to speak to you about it." It was a question about perennial slow starts and it being a theme this season. And what does he put that down to? more than fair question, I think, given what he'd already said, but also just what your eyes told you from the game. But yeah, he took exception to James, refused to answer it, and I don't want to go into it. But obviously, I know a little bit more about it, but I don't really want to go into it because I don't think it's fair. It's not me, but on a wider scale, it's a bit of a theme recently with Jürgen. You know, he's taken exception with a few people. And Dan and I were speaking before we came on air, weren't we? Karl Markham recently about transfers. I think he said, you know, how many press conferences have you been in? You keep asking me this question. There was an incident, a bit different, but with a BBC reporter before the City game, wasn't it, in the Cup, I think?
Full time, yeah.
You're not wearing a face mask, that one. Listen, there's been a few. I remember him a while back with another journalist who used to work for the club saying, oh, you think it's like a PlayStation game? So he's not... That was when it was good, you know. So he's not... It's not just a case of sort of... He lashes out after defeats. The other one I remember was Sky. Was it Calvert-Lewin's penalty where he sort of said, did you think it was a penalty? And he said, yeah. And he said, well, I can't speak to you then. You know, you know nothing about football. So he's like a lot of managers, isn't he? You know, there's a lot of managers who throw the sort of the odd... elbow, if you want to call it that, out after a game. I didn't think it was a great look, and I think it just feeds a little bit of the narrative that Liverpool are, you know, I don't believe it, but cracking up. So, you know, the cracks are widening at Liverpool. You know, Klopp's now having a go at journalists. You know, the play. You know, when you see players arguing on the pitch, or you see those kind of sort of, you know, few players. I don't know. You guys weren't there at the end, were you, on Saturday?
Oh, so, no.
But there was a few didn't go to the away end. There was a few went straight down as well. Most of them did, and some of them stayed for a while, Henderson and Elliott in particular. But
did we boo?
No. Well, not that I could tell. It probably isn't the kind of away end where you could really get a good boo.
No, you couldn't.
Could you?
No.
You know, it's too elongated. But
I was booing in the car.
Yeah, I was booing in the press box. But you know, things like that. Trent sort of shaking his head when you're coming off at Brighton, and you know, it just adds this sort of feeling that all's not right. And you know, the results do that themselves. But yeah, I didn't think it was a smart move. I didn't think it was a fair move, and I didn't think it was something that Klopp should look back on and you know, not be a little bit sort of sorry for or embarrassed by.
Okay, Dan, we'll move away from the manager. Let's talk about some of the players on the pitch. The first goal, I mean, we've got to talk about Matip and his performances in general, but in particular for that first goal, because like the manager mentioned, you can talk about lack of confidence, but there's no excuse for giving a player that much space and not being compact enough in the box. People have said, Carragher tweeted after the game, that judge centre-backs when they have to lead themselves, maybe struggling without Virgil van Dijk. How much of it do you think comes down to the fact that they haven't got Virgil alongside them and he kind of tells them where to be and leads them from the back? And how much of it is just, you know, individual errors that would happen regardless of who's playing next to them?
I would like to think they've all got enough respect for themselves that they don't go on the pitch and see it's not van Dijk and think, oh, fucking hell, what am I going to do? I can't look after myself here. I would like it if that was just a nice, easy excuse because he's going to be back soon and then everything was fine afterwards. But I think it's harder and more difficult than that. I think he's one of those players that often looks petrified lately. There was the one, it wasn't even the goal, but was it towards the end of the first half or the start of the second when the ball was bouncing and he just had to play it back to Alisson. And the lad wasn't even really properly chasing him down. Whoever the Wolves forward was clearly looking at him and thinking, well, that's going back to the goalkeeper. That's going to go back to the goalkeeper, isn't it? Hang on, I can get it. And then he takes it off him and they nearly scored. Every touch that the man takes or every decision that he makes at the moment looks like it's fraught with uncertainty. Like he thinks about seven times, is this the right thing to do?
I heard someone say on Saturday he was Liverpool's best attacker and their worst defender. And he played centre back. He almost looks like, get him in the opposition half
midfield.
Almost, and that gets his confidence up, you know,
back in the
halfway line,
where he used to play.
And that then, you know, Neil mentioned the very first ball of the game. I think as soon as somebody looks uncertain, or you look at someone and think, well, right, he's having a bit of a fucking one today, is he? Yeah, am I going to have to do his work for him or look after him or whatever? Then that just makes your brain think, oh God, this is going to be horrible. And if you're stood on the pitch 10 seconds in or 11 minutes in or whatever it was and you're 2-0 down and people around you are doing things like this, then it's so easy to just it's not care anymore, but not believe that there's anything good can come from this football match continuing. And that's what they always look like lately. When they played at Brighton, nobody thought that anything good was going to happen at any point. And it was the same to me in that game the other day. There were moments of little bits of quality. You know, Alexander-Arnold played that big ball around a corner that Nunes ran in on and stuff like that. But none of it's enough anymore. Still, no one in that stadium, including nobody that is employed by Liverpool Football Club, thought that Darwin Nunes was going to score. And I'm not blaming Darwin Nunes because of that. It's because no one thinks anything good's going to happen ever. And a lot of it comes back to these people who are playing panicked and unsure of themselves. A few months ago, even, I would have said that maybe of all of the Liverpool centre-halves, he's not necessarily the best one, but the one that's least likely to like make an error or slip over or whatever is Joel Matip.
I'm really flustered in
yeah, he's the one that's always the calmest. And maybe sometimes you could say he's too calm or something like that, but that's what I would have thought. And now players like that who had certain facets of not just their like skill on the ball or whatever, but their understanding of the game, their sort of like personality and the way in which they play have just been completely destroyed. So that man's sort of laid back attitude to everything is totally gone. And he seems scared of play being around him, whether it's stuff that he's supposed to do positively or whether it's stuff where he's supposed to cover someone else in a bit of like a more reactive way. And some of them are doing stuff like that in different ways. A lot of Robertson's play is different, for example, like we said before, but it's not for the same reason. It's not because he's looking at things and thinking, oh, I'm terrified of doing this. It's because I think a lot of the time he's not necessarily sure of what he's supposed to be doing and he's getting asked to do slightly different things that aren't that clear. He's got to cover for people that he didn't used to have to cover for. So if you end up with 11 people on the pitch who are not doing the things that, if you're just one of them and the 10 around you are no longer acting like themselves or doing the things that they used to do, you can never bank on anything. You can never just take a touch, turn and know someone's going to be there so you can kick the ball to them. You've always got to check. You've always got to look. You've always got to take an extra second or a half second or whatever it is. That slows everything. It makes everything less good. It makes everybody much more nervous. And I was thinking about it the other day, sort of watching the first two goals happen. And I've thought it a few times over the past month. I think maybe since the World Cup or maybe just in the past three or four games, the goalkeeper's just been all right. It hasn't been bad. He's just been all right. And I think what we've seen is this is what the season would have looked like if the goalkeeper had just been all right the whole way along, because he's been brilliant for the vast majority of it, mm-hmm. in spite of everybody else. And maybe if he hadn't been brilliant, stuff like this would have just been happening all the time and maybe Liverpool would be about 15th or 16th at best, because there are so many games where Liverpool got points because he saved goals that should have gone in the first 20 minutes or in the last 20 minutes or whatever that didn't happen. And now suddenly if people are looking at him and going, well, he's certainly not bad, but he's human like the rest of us. I can't just think that he's going to bail us out if I fuck up again. Then that again makes it even harder that you've not got this sort of superhero behind you who can pull off the odd thing that gets everyone out of trouble. I obviously everyone's acknowledged how good the goalkeeper is throughout the season, but I think the last few where he's just been normal, 6 out of 10 or whatever you would say, have really driven home the fact that, my word, if it wasn't for him, this would be even worse than it already is.
Yeah. I think conceding goals, sorry to hear it, stresses forwards as well. I think you just look, Salah has a couple of pokes at goal. He bends one. It's not a bad effort at all, but it's not going in anymore. Nunes is a really good finisher. He's a wayward, but he can be wayward. But even him, I mean, he has the one in the first half which he bends. The keeper makes a good save. The keeper makes a good save from him in the second half. You just feel if those goals weren't life and death goals, every single time he has a chance, he might have slotted one more. And then goals begat goals. And so there's a real, real crisis of confidence that happens for forwards when their goals don't matter as much as well. Salah's not playing well at all, but I did feel for him. He was trying to raise the morale of the team. It was striking, actually, after both the first and second goals as we trudge back to the halfway line. I thought, I've not seen that much Salah doing this. He was really clapping his hands together, giving it there. Come on, boys, come on, come on. He was taking a captaincy kind of responsibility. I thought, that's not like Mo to feel he needs to do that. And I look around this. Oh, there's no Jordan, of course. There's no Van Dijk. There's no James Milner. Suddenly there's no captains. He's looking into the engine room of the team and what was staring back at him was an 18-year-old boy, Thiago and Naby Keita, who's hardly on pitches for Liverpool. And both Thiago and Keita have been inconsistent as well. And they're not actually natural leaders in that side, in that dressing room. Maybe Thiago I'm being slightly unfair on. So that was the thing. I think it's the negative cycles are everywhere. Not having Van Dijk around means Matip can't be Matip. Salah not being Salah means Trent can't be Trent. Salah can't be Salah because he's playing for a team that's always 2-0 down. Darwin Núñez is coming to a side which has got no confidence, and suddenly I'm saying to people, Darwin's our best player, get Darwin on the pitch. And Darwin's thinking, whoa, wait, what now? I wanted to bed in here. So I'm the first few months in a new country, and already I'm the guy who's got to do bits. So yeah, it's all a bit shit. I mean, I suppose I sometimes think the only thing you can do is close your eyes, keep picking your best footballers, and one day it'll turn around, and then the next day it'll be slightly better. I mean, let's cast our minds back to the beginning of this season. Ten Hag took over a Man United tight team, very low on confidence, and immediately got them battered by Brentford, and then was at home to Brighton 4-0. They saw no way of correcting, no transfer window in sight, by the way, of correcting that. And look at them now, relatively. It's correctable. I think as fans, we have to, you know, we're obviously talking about the doom and gloom. We're describing what's before our eyes. And I'm the first to say, of course, it can get worse. But we have to believe in the get better. We have to focus on how it can get better, because, quite frankly, there's nothing we can do about it now but try and face forward.
I want to come back to you just on the Salah point, because Gakpo and Núñez obviously are relatively new players. You can kind of make excuses for them still settling in, especially Gakpo, who's literally just come in January. With Salah, we know the kind of form that he usually is in. Do you think it's more of a supply issue with the fact that, as Dan touched on earlier, there's a lack of confidence and lack of understanding of where the other player's going to be in positional sense? Or do you think it is more of an individual problem at the moment with Salah and not scoring chances that usually would be in the back of the net with sort of no doubt?
All of the above, actually. I'm afraid that's the answer to most of these things today. I watched him very, very closely on Saturday. There were times where I thought, he doesn't want to take his last man on anymore. There was times he was checking back inside and not to take another yard and look to bend one. He was checking back inside, looking for some help inside, rather, and there was space outside. But then he would be looking over his right shoulder, and there was no runners. There's no Henderson or Elliott, maybe even Trent, before we decided to play Trent as a right back in midfield, which is another debate for another day. But there's no overloads happening. And I think that's affecting the likes of Mo Salah. I think it makes it harder for Gakpo as well, quite frankly, coming in when he is playing as a wide player. And he's getting sucked into the middle, which does benefit Núñez occasionally. But yeah, I don't know. When tactics go to pot, it's tempting to say it's all on the manager. But I think interpreting tactics, instincts to follow instruction, change. So, you know, when the ball goes forward to Salah, where's the instinct now for someone to leg it outside him, because they know Mo's going to make room? It's just not there. Someone's scared of it coming back at them and getting caught with a ball in behind if there's a mistouch. Salah, but also I can let Mo off the hook in that sense, but at the same time, he's not been the player since AFCON, and we've been saying this for months and months and months. He's had the odd little purple patch, like away at Rangers for half an hour, where he looked like the best player in the world again. But it's really been few and far between. He's notched the odd goal, which I think has masked over a lot of his decline. The big question is, can we get the real Mo Salah back? I wish he was 27 rather than 30, 31, because you do have a fear sometimes when it ends at a certain age. I'm going to remain Salah positive. I'm not in that camp that wants to take 60 million off PSG in the summer yet. I'll just end on that bombshell.
Neil, I want to talk about our approach to games, because last season and for many seasons now, there used to be a sense of inevitability and invincibility when it came to Liverpool, that even when we went one goal down, the players' heads wouldn't go down for a single second. Particularly in that first half, I felt that the first goal went and then we conceded the second, and there was a sense of accepting the fate that you kind of saw from the players, particularly till half time. Yes, you can make an argument that in the second half they came out better, and maybe that the team talk and Klopp saying, come on, you've still got something to play for, made a difference. But did you feel like in the performance, particularly after the first goal went in, there was just an acceptance that was not their day, that was how it was going to be, and the effort and the performance kind of reflected that?
I wouldn't say so, no. I mean, I compare it a little bit to the Brentford game, in the sense of, obviously, it was one of them. It was like a bit of a wave that you thought one followed two. But the difference, I think, in both of those games was when Liverpool had their good spell, they didn't score and they didn't get back. Or they got one at Brentford and then didn't build on it, and they didn't get one at Wolves. You know, Klopp sort of said, oh, the first 12 minutes was the first 12 minutes. I think it was longer. I think it was half an hour at least. But he then said after that it was a an okay away performance. And it's not what you want to hear after a 3-0 defeat, but I think I know what he meant. You know, it was like one of them where they were dominating the game, weren't they, after half time?
Yeah, they very much were. Like, Making chances.
They were pinning them back, weren't they? You know,
Kaiser should score twice.
Yeah, every chance seemed to fall to him, didn't it? That was the problem. It was someone with such unusual, I'll use that word, technique striking a rolling ball. You know, I've not seen many who have the same as him, and he seems to have this desire to get everything onto his weaker foot. But that was sort of quite normal Liverpool. You know, you were like, but the difference when you don't score, and I sort of think back, if you want a sliding doors moment for this season almost, or this run, you think of just the first 10 minutes of Brentford, and Darwin Nunez goes around the keeper, lovely pass from Salah, and you think, if he just puts that in, you could be talking about Liverpool winning that game 2-0, and like that's three wins in a row in the Premier League, and Liverpool have got a tough one out the way, and now such confidence gets blocked somehow on the line. It feeds the frenzy of Darwin again missing chances. Oh, you know, he just can't buy a goal at the moment. You know, that all that goes on, and Liverpool end up 2-0 down by half time. You look on. I think if Liverpool score in that first 10 minutes of the second half, I think they probably get back to 2-2 at some stage. You might not win the game, but I think they probably do get level in the game, because it was just, you could see Wolves had sort of had reached the edge of the cliff and thought, oh, whoa, like we've got
they're
something
tired,
to sort of
didn't they,
got
well.
Something to lose. The fans were a little bit like, get out, you know, and that kind of thing. But this season tells you that the big sort of spells in the game that used to go Liverpool's way, they're not going Liverpool's way this season. You know, there's so many that you could look back on. They were twice level at Arsenal, and both times when they got level, you thought, oh, they're the better side here. They're going to go, no, can't build on it. You know, you think of Everton away, where you're thinking, should have scored at various points in that game, you know, hitting the bar and those kind of things. And when they don't go for you, that's when your certainty and your surety goes. And I agree completely with what Rob said. I think there's none of the players at the moment are able to just be selfless in the game. They're all thinking about their own sort of problems and struggles. They've all got too much on their mind almost, you know.
That's why Trent gets chances and then hits them over the bar crossing. And the decision-making, even when we're on top, is poor. And then Wolves are allowed to reset automatically.
And why Trent Robertson's position generally is just getting 5-10 yards deeper, because they're thinking, well, I can't go because Naby's thinking that. So he's not going to be there when I go. Or, as you say, you know, there's no Henderson or whoever. There's, you know, Darwin's really trying to sort of make his mark in the team. Gakpo's obviously just come new into the side. You've got two centre-backs who are second centre-backs, generally, I think, you know, preferably that they prefer to be the sort of the sweeping centre-back rather than the dominant one. You've got Robertson, obviously, bearing with the armband, but also having his own problems. You've got Stefan Bajeta trying to build a career. There's nobody that's just going to say, listen, you know, I'll... Sort of what Milner and Wijnaldum used to do all the time. It's just like, wherever you go, I'll plug that gap and that'll be fine. You know, you go and do your Trent stuff and I'll be there. No one's really got able to do that at the moment because they've all got too much on their plate.
Yeah, Dan, I'm not going to try and sort of pick out loads of positives from the game in this period, but we I think we should touch on Bajcetic, and I can never say his name right, but we're going to go with that.
Bajcetic,
yeah.
Yeah. I Googled it.
You Googled it. Go on once more.
Bajcetic.
Lovely.
Bajcetic.
Make a YouTube video out of that.
Yes.
I think one, when we're out the other side, and I do think we will get out the other side of this bad period, that might be one positive, that we've allowed him to get a lot of game time and see what he can do and maybe be a future and really integral part of that midfield at Liverpool.
He's played better than the other people have played.
That's the thing, is he just looking better because everyone else is playing quite badly?
Well, for example, I saw the other day, like once we'd left and we're back on the road and stuff, people were sort of saying how brilliant he'd been against Wolves. I certainly didn't think he was brilliant. I thought he was just probably the least worst one. But that's still, it's quite a backhanded compliment, but it is one, because he's 18 years old and at the beginning of the season was not considered a senior player who probably at any point would figure from the start in a serious game for Liverpool. And now he is, because, yes, everything's gone really badly, but they obviously do believe in him. I think he's got some really good qualities. I do still think at the moment that when he's playing against good players, adults, sometimes it's passed around him fairly easily, just because he doesn't know where he's meant to go, because he hasn't learned it yet. He's learning it on the job, and he will get better at it over time. But it's still like, How's it ended up like that? We're really pleased that this 18-year-old lad is getting to learn from
you need him in the team from any sense of stability in the
from midfield. 3-0 losses. when there are very senior people who have demonstrated not just that they're good footballers but strong characters who now are a shadow of him. So I'm not trying to be down on the lad at all. I think he's a really good player and he's done a lot better than those around him lately. But I do think that a lot of people who are not playing should be looking and thinking, well, why is he doing that better than I am? Because that's essentially someone that even last summer, maybe, I don't know when he turned 18, but is not long ago, and like a child, genuinely a child, and looks more mature and sensible in his decision making than I do. So what's that about? And how can I make sure that level of pressure and responsibility is taken off him a little bit? Because as much as it can be a real positive for him, they get a lot of games, this continues to be miserable. It could be horrible. That can happen with young players, and especially if he were to have like a couple of performances that weren't quite at the same level as he has done, and then every so often, you know, he gives the ball away and the crowd, oh, when he gives it away and that sort of thing, it can also be harmful. It would be nice if they were to just able to have him play in games and have him play well, but also manage him a bit better. And at the moment, they can't even sub him off in some games, because it's like, if we lose him here, then the whole thing's going to be even worse than what it is. And it's just staggering that from the position they were in only a few months ago, that's now the point where you're looking at this really talented but not there yet physically 18-year-old and going, God, we desperately need you on the pitch at all times. It's not fair on him.
He looks uncluttered. It shines a light on everyone else in just how simple he makes the game look. And I don't mean in terms of the way he plays it almost. It's just like what needs to be done in situations. You know, like I'm going to leather him here. He's going up in the air. You know, like obviously that's what you do, isn't it, against Adama Traore? You know, but no one does it. You know, no one else does it on the pitch. You know, I'll turn in midfield. You know, just things like that. I'll turn. The ball's in. I've got a bit of space. That's fine. Like, you know, timing and headers and things like that, rather than sort of being stood up. It's just someone who's fresh, and you know that shines the light on the underperforming players. But I think also on the lack of January business is that, you know, sometimes that freshness can just unlock a little bit of someone else. It shouldn't be down to an 18-year-old kid to get Jordan Henderson playing football again and Fabinho playing football. But the positive of Bajcetic is you do think he could look even better. If you had Fabinho and Henderson on form at either side of him or next to him, what a gem he could be, you know, because I said this last week on a show. People don't know how good he is yet. I've seen him for the 18s and the 21s, and I'm telling you now, he can do a lot more than he's doing now. I've seen him play far, far better than he's played for Liverpool's first team, but he hasn't got the chance to sort of do it because the structure isn't around him. He's putting fires out rather than actually building the game.
At the moment, he's not playing, and rightly and understandably, with the fear that a lot of the rest of them have, and they need to make sure it doesn't rub off on him.
Yeah, Rob, we've got just under half a season left to play. That's the reality in the league. We've got two games coming up against Real Madrid, which make my stomach turn at the thought of them. But there needs to be a sense of something to play for, doesn't there? And that's the challenge now, is that these players have to feel like they've got something to work towards and to play for. Otherwise, what's the point?
What's the point of life, Harry? You're right.
That's another show, Rob.
It does feel like we've been saying for a while, we're not even at the halfway stage of the season. We are now the other side of the halfway stage of the league season. We are just, We still do have a lot to play for. We can't win the league, that's for sure. But we can get top four. Boy, it feels like it'd have to be such a 180-degree turn in form and players miraculously nearly overnight go back to being the type of players they were for that to happen. But it is there to play for. If we can somehow correct this form and the players can find something much nearer their par, we could progress in the European Cup. I think anyone dreaming of lifting the big one around in Istanbul in May is deluded, because the odds are hugely against that for good reason. It's not really going to happen. I think the odds are we will get dumped out by Real Madrid. The thing about being in such bad form is it's unlikely to be better in the next game. You know, I don't know where the bottom comes, and it's just, but really, if we're to have a season, we can come away from it going, Jesus Christ, you know what? We turned that around quite nicely. In the end, we feel quite good about this. And next season with some new players, we can really go forward positively. for that to happen, it's about how soon the very, very badness stops. In a sense, it does have to at some point, right? I just don't think with these type of footballers, it slides into oblivion, it ends in relegation, because that's where it does go if it doesn't stop. At this point, getting great, we're going down. Let's make no mistake, that's the trajectory. But I just don't think that's likely. And I don't think, if I'm going to use the bookies odds to say there's no chance we're going to win the Champions League, I'm also going to use the bookies odds to say there's no chance we finish in the bottom half of the table, quite frankly. But I just don't know, Harry, because as Neil said earlier, I go into the games thinking, yeah, do you know what? I know what the teams we're putting out aren't the dream teams, but I still looked at our team compared to Wolves at the start, and the bookies made us 58% favourites to win that game. And I thought, yeah, we've got a good forward line, Salah, Gakpo and Nunes. I'm pleased he's keeping faith with a midfield, sort of. The defence, okay, we've lost Konate, but God, you've got Joel Matip coming back in, and the fullbacks there, the keepers. I can see, I'm glad we're not playing peak Bayern Munich or someone like that. But again, Wolves away, this would be a good platform with this kind of side to turn it around. Do I think of that against coming into Everton next week? I think it's the worst game to be playing. But ask me again, Newcastle away. I think I'm looking forward to Newcastle away more than I am the derby. Don't know why.
Neil, I'll give you the final word on this. You wrote in your Substack. Is that right? Is that what it's called? Substack? Yeah, got it right. That it's going to take money and sentiment-free decisions to turn this round. So I'll let you elaborate on that.
Neil.
Well, money's obvious, isn't it, in terms of you're going to have to spend some significant money. I think the sentiment-free is... There are some players at the club... Obviously, there's some out-of-contract players, which I don't think they need to be sort of the big decisions of the summer, really... But the ones around players of a certain age and players who've done a lot for the club, you know. So I personally don't remember a player having the drop off that Fabinho's had and coming back from it at Liverpool. I'm the only one I can really think of that is it even comparable, and even he didn't really, is sort of Dejan Lovren taking off at Spurs in the Wembley game, the famous Wembley game that sort of changed everything, you know. In Klopp's reign, came back and was still a useful player for Liverpool for a couple of seasons after that. This is someone who's been massive in Liverpool team and has still got, should theoretically retain a bit of value. Do you cut your losses with him, or do you say, no, we're going to back him, he's going to come good? Salah, another one, you know, you've given him a massive contract. You know, do you say, no, the reason we give him that contract was because we had faith in him the next 3 years. Joel Matip, I think Joel Matip should be sold and will be sold in the summer. Not because Joel Matip's not a good centre back, but because he's got 1 year left on his contract. He's gone the wrong side of 30. You're pushing a problem down the road for a couple of years, and you might have some short term pain with a new centre back coming in. You know, I don't think Trent's on the chopping block, but there's a new contract got to be discussed with Trent at some point. There's Jordan Henderson. The captain of Liverpool isn't playing at the moment, and an 18-year-old's anchoring the midfield. How do you resolve that issue? You know, are you banking on him? So there's a lot of players at Liverpool that you say, well, you could make a case for sell, you can make a case for keep, but I think the sentiment has to go out the window. It can't be. Well, Jordan Henderson's our captain. It can't be. Well, Fabinho, you know, was the best midfielder in the whole midfield in the league 2 years ago. Well, blah blah blah. You know. There's a lot that you have to sort of say, no, do you know what? We're gonna go down this route. We're gonna go down this younger player route, and we're gonna get rid of that. And thank you for everything, Joel Matip. I also think that the same needs to be done with Milner with his contract. I think the same needs to be done with Keita 100% with his contract. You can't just keep going. No, let's just hope. I don't have too much of a problem with Firmino because I think the forward line is one that you need stocked. I think Liverpool need to be stocked, and we've seen this season obviously the damage that it can do if you're not. So, and it's a short term thing, but yeah, he could fall into that category 100%. Where you could say, look, you can't just keep sort of asking him to go to the well again. But there's so many in this team. Thiago, I think Thiago's one that you look at and say, do you know what? Look at I don't think he's a bad player. I don't think he's been a bad player for Liverpool, but. Is the new Liverpool where they're going to go with your Nunezes and Gakpo, Diaz, Jota, whoever? Is he the guy? Is Joe Gomez going to be Liverpool's starting centre back in 2 years' time? I don't think he is. I don't think he. Is Curtis Jones going to get in Liverpool's team and stay in Liverpool's team? No. There's a lot of decisions where you could catch him after a good game and you could say, ah, there you go, look, Curtis Jones, that's what he can do. But there's too many of them that have got too much at the moment where you say, I don't believe in them. I don't believe in them being Liverpool's future. And, you know, I don't think you can sell them all, but there's some that you're going to have to say, no, he's got to be the one that's been sacrificed, or the two that have been sacrificed.
A lot of work to be done in the short term and the long term. You're looking forward to facing Sean Dyche's Everton a week today?
No.
you don't have to.
But I will on the day. The only thing we can do is all turn up and be really loud and be really aggressive and fucking back them to the hilt. And if it doesn't work, at least you've tried. But that's the only thing that people can do. They can argue about, you know, whatever, stuff to do with the past, stuff to do in the present, stuff to do with the future. The only thing you can do is turn up to Anfield or do whatever it is that you're doing to watch the game. But if you're going, is turn up and believe in them and try to have that help them believe in themselves and then, yeah, beat them. And hopefully the one thing that can help us all feel better come the end of the season is that we've played a part in sending them down.
Yeah, well, if you are in the USA, we've got lots of things to make you feel better because we have got a tour coming up in North America. We're playing in, it sounds like we're a band. Toronto, Detroit, Boston, New York, Washington, Philadelphia. I think some of the dates were already sold out. It's in March. Craig is going to shout at me because I don't know the exact dates. But you can look it up yourself on theanfieldwrap.com/tour live and get your tickets if you're listening in America or just fancy a trip to see some of the team from the Anfield Wrap. Well, thank you to Dan, to Rob, to Neil, to Andy for producing and Sam for doing the video. Hope that gave you a little bit of clarity. Hope that was more fun than the 90 minutes watching the game against Wolves. And we'll be back after the Everton game next Tuesday. Sports Social Podcast Network.